Welcome to the Revenue Rebels podcast, brought to you by Warmly. On this show, we cut straight through the fluff and dive deep into the specific tactics that B2B revenue leaders across sales and marketing are using to find success in today's environment. I'm your host, Alan Zhao. All right. Today we have here Dana Warren, who is a venture partner at Canaan Partners, which is an early stage venture capital firm. They've had early investments in Instacart, The RealReal, and Match.com. Dana herself has had 15 years of experience building and running revenue, marketing, and strategy at companies like American Express, PayPal, and Stripe. And most recently at Stripe, she's helped build and grow global strategic partnerships with companies like Shopify, Salesforce, and Squarespace. Being a part of fast-growing companies means leadership is often faced with hitting ambitious goals. So today we're going to talk about how to build an A-plus team to hit those goals. Dana, it's great to have you on today.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. So let's get started with a quick background about yourself and we'll dive into the topics.
Sure. Happy to. So I'm originally from New York, and a fun fact about me is that I started riding the New York City subways alone when I was 8 years old. So that usually takes people back. So I'm originally from New York, lived all around the world, and back in New York, three kids, live in Westchester.
That's wonderful. I used to live in New York for 4 years. It's very hectic, but it's a great city. So what does amazing leadership look like? You worked at many amazing companies. You've had, I'm sure, incredible bosses. If we could visualize it for the audience, what does that look like?
Yep. I appreciate, Alison, that you talked about having great bosses, because I think that's really important. I've seen great leadership in action. And it was actually at American Express under Ken Chenault's leadership as CEO where I learned about this comment and theory around followership. It's not enough to be a leader and be told that you're the boss and there are lines on an org chart that report to you. You actually have to create followership. You have to create a team that believes in you, that sees that you are excellent at your craft, that you engender support, and you focus people on delivering results, and you actually enable them to do so. So for me, great leadership is all those things that I saw firsthand and was trained on at American Express, and I've carried that throughout my career.
That's great. And how about an A-plus team? What does an A-plus team look like?
I appreciate that question, because often folks ask me, what are the tricks of your trade when it comes to leading sales, revenue, marketing, or strategy teams? And I always start with A-plus team is an A-plus player only team. No exceptions. And what that really means when you define an A-plus player, this is someone who is excellent at their craft. They are always pursuing the answer. They dive into the details. They analyze deeply. And it doesn't necessarily mean that they all look the same, quite the opposite. You want a really diverse team. You want rich experiences, different backgrounds, different careers. In fact, I often tell the story of someone who was on my team at Stripe who was actually formerly a lawyer. And he was a salesperson on the team. And what was incredible was that he could bring that analysis that he was trained on and frankly, probably also had the intuition and really dive deeply into his prospects and customers. And I often would say we need to, as salespeople, understand and analyze our prospects the same way or better than a Morgan Stanley analyst understands the company they're covering. It's as if we're on every earnings call. And so I think when I talk about A-plus player, it's just that you want to pursue excellence in everything you do and understand really what the possibilities are.
I love that. Some of our best engineers actually came from pretty non-traditional backgrounds, including law, including investment banking. They have a very keen attention to detail, which does very well in a very structured role like engineering. So do you have a particular example that comes to mind of an A-plus player that you've had on your team?
Yes, I think the previous one's a great example, but I think another one, a different angle of what A-plus means. One of the trainings I took, actually a dear friend of mine at PayPal introduced me to the notion of strengths-based leadership. And this is really about, by the time someone comes onto my team at this point in my career, they've been in the workforce for some time and they have demonstrated areas where they're strong. And we're going to lean into that. And then we're going to try to improve areas where they need development, but we're going to really exploit, take advantage, celebrate the things that they're best at. And you asked for another example, and an A-plus player who joined my team was a sales manager, and he came with incredible payments background. And we were at a payments company, and he understood the value chain in payments like nobody else at the company at the time, in my humble opinion. And so I leaned into those strengths. I brought him to team meetings. I had him shadow sellers. I had him share trainings, write documentation, really create playbooks to lift everybody up. But what I also asked him was, what was he there for? What was he playing for? What was his motivation? And he really wanted to become a sales leader. He wanted my job. And so we worked really hard on giving him those opportunities to step into, not leap into, but step into leadership and really coaching him on what it means to be a leader, what it means to actually be that sales leader. How do you create territories? How do you define forecasts? How do you keep people accountable, and how do you coach them?
I love that answer. And this segues really nicely into the next topic, which is like, when you're a leader and you have to manage A-plus players who are incredible in their own right, then how do you coach them? What can you provide? And what's the perspective to think about this through it?
In my career, I have run into many people who, when they have great teams, they truly believe that they can set it and forget it, that they can let the teams run themselves. Or sales leaders who sometimes think their job is the pipeline, report, and managing up. And respectfully, I think that's really missing the whole point of the job and minimizing the potential of a team. The way that I really see my role is to be the coach. And I know in sales, a lot of folks say, ABC, always be closing. For the type of deals I've led in my career, that is absolutely not the right thing to do. If you're doing a large strategic sale, you do not want to be closing on day one. You want to be questioning, understanding, analyzing, building a relationship. And ultimately, if you close too early, I have found you're likely leaving money on the table. So instead, I create a culture of always coaching. On the team, that means we are prepping for every meeting. We're actually role-playing, myself included. We are going to meetings with others so that it's not just about recording the meeting on Gong. It's actually listening there live, traveling to Canada with the team member so that you can see what were the cues in the room that they missed or that they leaned into really well. And then immediately, you know, after every meeting, you're going to get feedback, whether that's from your peer, your direct report, or me. And ultimately, you create this culture where everyone's each other's coach. Everyone embraces the feedback and they grow because of it.
It's amazing. It doesn't always start off that way. Do you have any advice on how to build that type of culture?
I really appreciate that question because I've worked on teams where I inherited greatness, and I've also worked on teams where we either had to rebuild, which is really hard, or start from scratch. On the starting from scratch, the benefit is you get to leverage your network. You get to bring in people that you stand behind. And frankly, my perspective is if I hired you, I'm coaching you and I'm believing in you and creating an environment of trust. The really hard one is when you inherit and you have to rebuild. And oftentimes that means you have to be very clear about your expectations. Oftentimes when I started a company or start with a team, I share a memo about me and it's a learned behavior. This did not come naturally. What is it like to work with me? What are my norms? When can you expect to get a Slack from me? When am I going to ask you for pipeline reports? When am I going to get the group together? And what are examples of pitch decks that I love? What are memos that I think are outstanding? Do I expect you to share notes from every meeting? Just truly share who I am. And then, frankly, folks can opt in and opt out. They can read that and say, Dana is going to Slack me often, and I don't want to be part of that culture. Or I'm okay working 7 days a week. And the fact that she said she's not going to bother me on the weekend unless it's truly urgent, like I'm here to work all the time. I use that example a bit tongue in cheek. But the point is, as a leader, you need to set the expectations really early and then be consistent. Because if you don't deliver on the person that you've articulated you are as a leader, folks are just going to opt out anyway.
Do you have any particular examples of when someone that you've seen or maybe even yourself earlier on where you weren't consistent, and what was the cost of that?
Oh, absolutely. So I feel as if we could do a whole bloopers reel of all the things I did wrong as a leader, and I'm happy to share that as well. I think part of being a great leader and a great human and a friend is recognizing that you make mistakes every day, right? I think of one that really stands out, a woman actually who was on my team at American Express gave me direct feedback when I was a relatively early manager, but a large team. I think there were about 30 people. And I actually had just had my first daughter and I never spoke about her. And she came into my office at the time. It was a pretty traditional structure. You became a VP and you got an office. And she walked in and she said, "I'd like to give you some feedback if I may." I said, "Absolutely." She said, "You never talk about your daughter and you're the only female with a child at your level in this group. So how are we supposed to know that you can do both, that you can excel and have a child if we don't let us in to what you're doing?" Fast forward, I told that story all the time. And then when I joined Stripe, I recruited her and said, "Do you know this? You're part of my leadership stump speech. You have to be true to yourself. You have to bring your whole self to the field. Everybody is dealing with things at home. They're very different. They're really varied. People have times when they're dealing with stuff that takes them away from their concentration. If you don't share who you are and how you're balancing, I think it really makes you appear like Teflon and really difficult to connect with. And frankly, it's less motivating."
You gave a couple examples when we were talking before this about radical transparency within the team and to make sure that no stone is unturned. Everyone's speaking their mind, surfacing their opinions to make sure all bases are covered. Are there other examples in the company that you've seen where being transparent and covering all the bases, it's benefited you guys?
Absolutely. I would say countless. More often than not, it is rare to be a team that is full of trust and transparency. And more often than not, there are teams that miss important details because of it. And so what I mean by that is, my finding is when you're building your team, if you don't create an environment, whether that's a seller, a customer success leader, a marketer, that folks, they have to feel supported and they have to know that they're in an environment where psychological safety is number one. It's paramount. And when you do that, I've seen firsthand, folks take calculated risks. They propose creative solutions. And they accept that they're going to make mistakes and get feedback and coaching, and then they'll deliver something even better. I think in a time when one example would be, we were putting our heart and souls, as you do to your work, in preparation for a huge deal that we were working on when I was at PayPal. And it was a really meaningful piece of the business. And I was letting the team just go through the motions because the stakes were so high. There was incredible pressure and we didn't take the time to go slow so that we could go fast. And ultimately our first pitch on this massive consequential deal, I hate to say colossal failure, but it was as close as it could get. It didn't resonate with the client. Folks didn't know their roles. They didn't feel comfortable. So my point in sharing that story is obviously back to my previous point. Everybody makes mistakes. You learn from them. But actually, the results really show whether or not you have prepared, you've given people feedback. And I think it comes back to the comment I made earlier, which is this has to be a coaching environment. It has to be A-plus players, and you have to create, especially as a revenue leader, an environment where it's not just about pipeline and prospecting. You're coming together as a team, and you're tearing down the strategy and building it back up in a way that it's better than it would have been if you weren't all working on it together.
Yeah. 10 minds, 2 minds, all of which are better than 1 mind, just thinking about it in isolation. So we talked a little bit about coaching and giving feedback. It gets to a point where sometimes coaching is not enough and you might need to manage certain people into other roles, or how do you manage underperformers?
I think that's an important question. It's a delicate one, right? So my modus operandi in life is always operate from a point of respect. I talk about in meetings, we will disagree. We should disagree. That's the purpose, or else we could do this all remotely, async and alone. But it has to be from a perspective of respecting the other person and respecting their opinions and respecting the differences. Having underperformers is incredibly complicated. It's incredibly stressful for the performer, the team, the leader. And it's very hard to get it perfectly correct. But if you start with this point of respect and articulating that this role isn't a fit for their skills. And I would also add, and I learned this more recently in my career, that you act with urgency around it. It's not good for anyone to have an underperformer. As I mentioned, it pulls the whole team down. And likely the individual in my experience knows that they're underperforming and has that psychological weight of not delivering. I will tell you that there are really great stories. I have, I think, countless stories of having a performer on my team who is sitting in a strategy role. I have this example from when I was at American Express. We were doing strategy. She was struggling. The results weren't there. And we talked about the elements where she was performing above and beyond. And I sat with leaders who I really respected. And I said, we need to find a place for her to deliver the areas where she's strongest, which were clearly marketing. We moved her into marketing. She was one of the top performers. So I think that's the other piece. Companies are lots of different sizes, different phases. Sometimes there aren't those roles available, but you do need to find what the skills are and make sure you're leveraging them.
It's amazing. One of the things that you also mentioned as being core to strong leadership is knowing where to place your people. How do you find the top players?
This is really hard. I think that there have been so many books. I've read some. I've met with many people. But my experience, I was really lucky. When I joined Stripe, I got to be part of a rigorous process that I experienced as a candidate and then I delivered as an employee, where there was a structure, there were prepared notes, prepared questions. Every interviewer was trained. And for me, that is really critical from a hiring perspective. To your question around where do you find them? How do you source great candidates? I think that's really important because it is my responsibility as a leader to ensure that I don't hire people that just look and sound like me, right? And so our social networks tend to lean into folks that have the same backgrounds. So yes, you're going to reach out to the top performers you've worked with before, and you're going to tap your LinkedIn network and where you went to school, but you are really going to lose if you're only doing that. I worked with phenomenal recruiters. A great example at American Express, they always had a diverse slate, diverse in background, experience, culture. And we spent time and frankly money ensuring that we were tapping into all of the networks that existed for underserved candidates, for diverse experiences. And we showed up and we demonstrated that we actually really were going to be hiring, which is an important point.
That's great. Some of our best candidates have come from extremely untraditional, and it's not where they came from or what they've done in the past, but what they can bring to the table. So definitely agree with that. We're going to end with this question, which is there anybody in your career that you'd like to give a shout out to?
I love this question. I have been literally blessed with working for incredible leaders. Two folks at Stripe who recruited me and I got to work with and work for were still there, Jean DeWitt Grosser and Christian DiCarlo. And at PayPal, a woman, Kathleen Pierce Gilmore, who's now at Visa, she said something to me that stuck with me forever, which is when she hired me, she said, "I hired you because I believe in you. I will have your back when you do well, and I will have your back when things get tough." And she did. And I've carried that with me. So thank you.
Amazing. How can people find out more about you?
Well, I recommend going to the Kanan website, learn more about Kanan, and my bio's there. And I am active on LinkedIn. So head over there and you'll see a bit about what I write about, what I do, and my network.
All right. Thank you so much, Dana. Really appreciate having you on here.
Thank you.